Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowain. There is a growing trend among American companies to hire fewer full-timers and more, sometimes many more, part-timers. Over the last 6 years, about 1 million full-time jobs have been cut, while more than 500,000 part-time jobs have been added. The trend is continuing as employers save money on wages and benefits and enjoy a large pool of part-timers they can call upon as needed. For the workers, it's often a different story. Lower hourly wages, unpredictable hours, and few or no benefits. And women sometimes can be hit hardest. So this hour, we're talking about the upsides and downsides of the trend toward a part-time workforce. We'll hear more about the impact on women a little bit later, but we begin with Stephen Greenhouse. Stephen is the labor and workplace reporter for the New York Times and is the author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Workers. Stephen, welcome to Radio Times.
Nice to be here, Tracy.
And let me just invite our listeners to join in our conversation. If you are a part-timer, you're struggling with these issues, a full-timer who maybe your job is threatened or you're finding that that's very difficult, we'd be interested to hear your stories and your questions for our guests. The number is 888-477-9499. So, Stephen, what precipitated this trend toward more part-timers?
I think a lot of retailers and restaurants and other companies are eager to save money. You know, the world has become more competitive. A lot of retailers feel the heat of a Walmart down the street, you know, a Sears, a Target. You know, they're all trying to keep their costs down to a minimum so they could sell their products at a minimum. So I think that's so one advantage to the employer of hiring part-time workers, and the disadvantage to the worker is that, you know, you could save a lot on benefits.
Yeah.
Generally, the pay of part-time workers is lower than for full-time workers, and the percentage of part-time workers who get vacation or who get health coverage or who get pensions or retirement plans is far, far lower. So generally, employers can save several dollars an hour by using part-time workers other than full-time workers. Also, Tracy, is the explosion of so-called scheduling software that many employers use to make it easier for them to schedule their employees. You know, 20, 30 years ago, you know, before we had all this elaborate software, companies would generally schedule everyone full-time, even retailers, and it was easy. You'd work 9 to 5, or you'd have, you know, someone come in from 12 to 8. Now, with this sophisticated software, employers and especially retailers try to match the number of employees they need for any given hour to, you know, the flows of customers into a Sears or a Walmart, into McDonald's or Taco Bell. They really try to make sure that they don't have too many employees on hand when customer traffic lags.
So that's really interesting, Stephen. They've basically got software. I guess they've studied patterns over time that can give them a sense of, you know, okay, we know on Black Friday it's going to be crazy, or on, you know, Saturday mornings we're going to have a rush between 9 and 11. Is that the kind of specificity that it can give?
Yeah, exactly, Tracy. When I interviewed executives at several different retailers, they say, we schedule employees based on customer traffic over the last 2 weeks or the last 4 weeks, and also looking back a year or two or three to what happened, say, on Black Friday, or what happened on Easter Sunday, or what happens, you know, for the back-to-school rush before Labor Day. And not only that, this new software, you can track hour by hour, you know, what happens. And I know that at some fast food restaurants, if there's a sudden drop-off in the number of customers, say, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. or 2 p.m. to 3 p.m., that very day, they'll say, hey, John, hey, Jose, you know, we really don't need you to be working right now. Why don't you head home?
Wow.
And, one of the main points of this big story I did, Tracy, about part-time workers is that not only does this mean many workers are just not earning enough money, and, you know, if you're earning, you know, $9 an hour and only working 15 hours a week, that's 130, what, my math is going to fail us here, I think $135 a week, or about $7,000, $8,000 a year.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to live on that. So the part-time work means many, many workers don't even begin to reach the poverty line. And the second problem with the part-time, you know, with this increase in part-time work, is that while it, creates wonderful flexibility for employers being able to plug, this work, these fee workers we need for the busy 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. slot at a department store, it creates real instability for workers. Yeah. It makes it hard for them to schedule child care. It makes it hard for them to even go to college if they want to go to college. It makes it hard, to schedule doctor's appointments. Several workers I interviewed said they only receive the next week's work schedule like a day or two or three before the work week began. And a company like Walmart has its act together in that. They usually give the work schedule 3 weeks beforehand. And that's, that makes it much easier to plan your life.
Yeah.
But I interviewed a worker at Express, the fashionable apparel company for young people. Mm-hmm. And he said many times he did not get his week schedule until a day or two before the week began.
Wow.
And, this was a guy who wants to be an actor. And he said, he might have an audition scheduled for Wednesday or Thursday. And because he didn't learn his schedule, his work schedule until a few weeks before, sometimes he had to cancel his auditions. And how here in New York, so many retail and restaurant employees are struggling actors, and those auditions are extremely important.
So essentially, for all the aggravation of not knowing exactly when you're working, when you're going to be off, how many hours you're going to be working, you may be getting lower hourly wages because you are part-time and you have no benefits and you might miss other opportunities is what it sounds like.
Yes, and I should add, just to be clear, there, in the United States, there are about, 24 million part-time workers, about one-fifth of the workforce. About one-third, one-fourth of them, of those part-time workers, want to work full-time, and they're called involuntary part-timers. Mm. And just to be clear, there are a lot of, college students who are happy to work part-time. They want some spending money, they want money to contribute towards their tuition. There are a lot of mothers who are taking care of young kids, and they're happy to, go out and work, 6 hours a day, 4 hours a day when their kids are in school. So there are a lot of, people who are happy to work part-time, but there's a growing number of part-timers who do want to work full-time. And in my story, I mentioned that in retail and in hospitality, like hotels and restaurants, the number of involuntary workers is 2.5 times what it was just 5 years ago. There are more than 3 million of them. And what's happening, I submit, is there kind of a disconnect between the interests of employers and the interest of employees. For employers, it's a wonderful thing in many ways to use all these part-time workers. I say in my story that for service sector workers, part-timers generally earn $10.92 an hour, including wages and benefits, like the cost of health coverage. So $10.92 an hour. And for the typical full-time worker in the service sector, service workers, they earn 57% more, $17.18 an hour. So for employers, there are in many ways huge savings in using part-timers. And then, as we discussed, Tracy, using part-timers gives you huge flexibility. In terms of, I need to plug in two extra workers to work this lunch hour, or two extra workers we need because we have a sale at our department store and we're going to need more people in the lingerie department or in the shoe department.
So rather, I was just going to say, Stephen, rather than just extending the hours for the part-timers, it sounds like it's more cost-effective to have a lot of part-timers available so that, you can plug anybody in, and if somebody can't do it, then you've got four more lined up behind them.
Exactly. I interviewed this gentleman who used to run a Target store, and he said, they had 10 cash registers. So if for the 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. shift, you have just, say, 12 workers to work, 12 full-time workers to work, a full-time 9-to-5 shift, and if on a given day three of the 12 workers call in sick, you're only going to have 9 workers to work your 10 registers, and that's not good for you, the manager. So he says it's much better to have, instead of 10 full-time workers working the 10 registers, it's better to have 20 part-time workers. Because that way, if three call in sick, you'll still have 17 workers to draw from to fill these 10 spots. I hope I'm not doing too much math here.
Right, but then, and then of course the frustration for the part-timers is, gee, I would gladly have taken more hours, but instead I'm seeing them hire more people, right?
Yeah, exactly. In my story on part-time workers, I focused on this woman who works for a new grocery chain in California called Fresh and Easy. She's a terrific 50-year-old woman. She used to be an administrative assistant for a construction company until the construction bust that we all know so much about. So for the past 5 years, this woman has worked at this grocery chain, and she's been dying to be given a full-time job there, but most weeks she works no more than 25, 26, 27 hours, and she's making $10.90 an hour after 5 years, so she makes about $300 a week, about $15,000 a year. And this woman, Shannon Harden, told me it's just not enough to live on. She said she has a badly broken tooth that needs a crown that's going to cost her over $1,500. And she said on what she earns each year, she can't begin to afford to go to the dentist to fix that. She said, a few months ago she had problems on another teeth, and she, again, couldn't afford to have the tooth repaired, so she had the tooth pulled. She said she doesn't have a TV. She told me that because she earned so little, even though a friend offered to give her an old, beaten-up TV, she turned down the friend because she said, look, I can't begin to afford cable.
Wow.
And when there's a show that she really, really wants to watch, this sounds like a teenager, she's 50 years old, but she goes to her mother's house a few miles away to watch a show.
Yeah.
And she says, she tells the manager, I'd love to work more hours, but, often they'll be hiring more people so that, they spread around, fewer hours to more people. Once in a while, another worker will go on vacation or get sick, and the manager will throw her a shift or two more.
Yeah.
And that makes her very happy.
So are we moving, and this is in our last 45 seconds or so, Stephen, are we moving toward people just working a number of part-time jobs, trying to, pile on those jobs or and hope that the scheduling balances out?
And as you know, Tracy, there are a lot of dynamics in the economy. There are a lot of, as more employers have moved to part-time work, we find that there are more employees juggling 2, 3, 4 jobs. Generally, when the unemployment rate falls, and it's falling slowly, more slowly than we would like, more part-time workers have the option of finding full-time jobs because employers, with the unemployment rate falling, it's not as easy for them to, take this worker, that worker. They really have to be a little workers can be fussy about what jobs they take, and they have a little more bargaining power to insist on a full-time job rather than a part-time job. But what's happening here is this longer-term trend towards using more part-time workers.
Yeah. We want to talk about that more, and we'll be taking our listener calls as well when Radio Times comes back. We are talking about the rise in part-time jobs and why it's been a double-edged sword for those who work part-time when Radio Times comes back.
The Association of Fundraising Professionals Greater Philadelphia Chapter supports WHYY and celebrates National Philanthropy Day, November 14th, to recognize philanthropists, volunteers, and fundraisers for their contributions in our community. Online at afpgpc.org.
JerseyArts.com supports WHYY, featuring details on Grounds for Sculpture, the 42-acre sculpture park in Hamilton Township, New Jersey, near Princeton. Offering 3 months of winter wonders, including thousands of holiday lights in its trees, family fun, and seasonal festivities starting with the annual Lights On celebration November 24th and 25th. Open late Fridays and Saturdays in December. Directions and a calendar of events at groundsforsculpture.org. Grounds for Sculpture and more online at jerseyarts.com.
This week, Hindus around the world are celebrating Diwali, and as you might expect, it has its time-honored traditions, customs, and of course, food. We get an introduction to some of the treats Hindus enjoy during the holiday. Author Anupi Singla will be with us to share some of the culinary delights of Diwali. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Trader Joe's, traveling the world to source a variety of foods and beverages, like their sweet and tart hibiscus cranberry juice. Locations and more at TraderJoe's.com.
Welcome back to Radio Times. We are talking about jobs, particularly the rise in part-time jobs, even as full-time jobs are declining, and what that means for American workers. Our guest is Stephen Greenhouse. He is the labor and workplace reporter for the New York Times, and he has recently written a piece on this very topic called A Part-Time Life as Hours Shrink and Shift. Stephen, welcome back to Radio Times. I want to welcome our listeners as well and give the number. If you are a part-time worker, if you are sort of caught in the middle of this cycle of more part-time jobs, fewer full-time jobs, the number is 888-477-9499. And we want to go to the phones and start off in Cape May County, or is that Cape May Courthouse, perhaps, with Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thank you for this this long, underserved conversation. In my experience, my observation, this is nothing new. This has been going on for years, especially with the large employers. Down here is a little different dynamic. There's a lot of poverty. It's a very seasonal economy. But just in general, my observation is that there's no such thing as full-time service industry work anymore. And two points I wanted to make. One is I believe it's, in a large part, an effect of not having a national health care plan. Because if they can hire you part-time, they can hire three part-timers to do the work of one full-timer, or in some cases one part-timer, the way they work people to death these days, they can avoid paying health insurance premiums. The other thing is they expect, just in my recent experience, you apply for a full-time job. They want you to give them full schedule availability. You have to be available all the time. So for most people, it's not even possible to juggle two or three part-time jobs anymore. I've done that. I've had as many as four jobs at a time. But if you don't give them full availability, then they'll say, well, sorry, we'll hire the next guy, and which really makes it impossible to have more than one part-time job.
Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you for your call, and your points are well taken. Stephen, what do you say?
Mark makes some excellent points. In my story, I interviewed a Walmart manager who said a lot of single mothers, you know, would come into his office on the brink of tears, and they'd say, I can't support my kids. I can't support my family on 15, 20 hours a week. You need to give me more hours. And he said, sorry, I have my allotment of hours. I can't give you more hours. And then some of them would say, hey, I really need to look for a second job. And then the Walmart manager would say, look, we want full availability. As Mark says, we want you to be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that we could schedule you when we need you, and that if you take a second job and therefore have less availability, then we at Walmart, and this isn't just at Walmart, this is at other companies as well, we're going to schedule for fewer hours. Mm. And I think that persuades a lot of workers, hey, it isn't even worth trying to look for a second job because I'll have even fewer hours on my first job. Another good point Mark made is, what's happening on health coverage. I imagine if we had Canadian-style health coverage where the government paid for health coverage instead of employers, employers wouldn't feel pressure to hire more part-time workers because that way you don't have to pay their health coverage. We've seen some employers say now at Red Lobster and some other companies that because of so-called Obamacare, because of the Affordable Care Act, they're going to hire more part-time workers because the Affordable Care Act doesn't punish them for not providing health coverage to part-time workers, whereas it will punish them for having a lot of full-time workers who don't have good or don't have any health coverage. So they argue that they're being pressured by Obamacare to hire more part-time workers. A lot of critics of those restaurant companies say that's a lot of bunk. They were going to hire more part-time workers anyway, to save money, and they just want to blame President Obama.
Well, I think that insurance question is really interesting, Stephen. When you think about part-time workers who may be in a position where they either have to forego insurance, they're not getting it from their job and can't afford it, or spend a lot of their income purchasing private insurance, which for some is probably not even, on the table, correct?
Correct. You know, after my front page story appeared on part-time workers, a lot of the email comments, you know, the electronic comments we got were saying, you know, we have these companies like Toys R Us, Walmart, Sears, Target, that are, you know, paying people, you know, employing people 15, 20 hours a week times $8 or $9, making $160, $180 a week. And as a result, a lot of them, you know, the companies and the employees end up being supported by the taxpayer. You know, a lot of these employees qualify for food stamps. A lot of them qualify for Medicaid. A lot of them qualify for welfare. They earn so little money. And, you know, so, a lot of our readers were saying, is this fair? This in ways fattens the profits of these retailers, and the government indirectly subsidizes the retailers by paying for the, you know, food stamps, Medicaid of these low-paid employees. On the other hand, some will say, well, yes, the government is in ways subsidizing these companies, but this helps, you know, 300 million, 320 million Americans by helping these companies keep their prices down, and that's, in theory, good for the consumers.
Well, at this point, Stephen, I want to bring in another guest to join us, because one of the points that we made was that women can often be harder hit by this kind of thing, and you gave a great example from the piece that you wrote for the New York Times about a woman who finds herself in that very position. I want to welcome Susan Lambert to join us. She is associate professor at the University of Chicago's School of Social Service Administration, and there her research focuses on the work side of work-life issues, primarily studying low-skilled hourly jobs. Her opinion piece, When Flexibility Hurts, was published in the September 19th issue of the New York Times. Susan, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning, and hi, Steve, as well.
Hi, Susan.
So, Susan, tell us about what this means many times for women. I know that Stephen has interviewed some, and we were talking about, you know, single moms in particular needing more hours to be able to support their families. What are the issues that are unique to women here?
Well, I don't know that they're unique to women, but women are certainly overrepresented in part-time jobs over you know, as Steve mentioned, about right now about 19% of our workforce work part-time, but close to, you know, 25% of women work part-time. But I think overall, you know, it's important to note that in part-time jobs, 70% of the people who are working part-time are 25 or older, and most of them are not just high school or college kids. And so they are, as Steve has, you know, pointed out so well, these are people who are trying to earn a decent living. And so one of the problems with that these jobs pose for women, which Steve has also talked about, is the unpredictability and the fluctuating hours make it very hard to combine your work with any kind of personal responsibilities, especially when you have children. It makes it very difficult to set up reliable child care when you don't have a reliable schedule. Yeah. What we find in the research that we've done is that often workers have to set up child care just in case you work, you know, Tuesday or Thursday rather than Monday or Wednesday. And so you might have to set up child care for many more hours than you're actually going to have to need it.
Yeah.
And often, you know, the formal, my colleague Julie Henley studies the relationship between work and child care, and often, you know, formal child care centers, the hours just do not line up with many of the hours in these kinds of jobs.
Yeah. Well, and most of them are probably more of a, you know, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. or something. But if you're working night shift or overnight, that presents a whole other set of issues.
Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of people would talk about with them, we need to change the child care centers to, you know, be open those hours. But a lot of times, you know, parents would prefer those times when a lot of intimate family routines happen, such as having dinner together, you know, bedtime routines. They really don't want their children at a child care center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those kinds of you know, kind of intimate family routines, that they would prefer to have care in their home, and they, you know, would often prefer to be there they're themselves.
Well, it was interesting, Susan, that you wrote in your New York Times piece that women at the top and bottom of the labor market are being affected by some of the incentives that are, you know, guiding businesses' employment practices. Can you give us some examples? I'm thinking about women at the other end of the scale.
Yeah, one of the things that Steve was just talking about are, you know, what are the motivations or the incentive structures for employers to manage labor the way that they do. And overall, a big incentive, of course, for employers is to try to limit their outlays for labor. And at the top of the labor market, where a lot of workers, not all, but many are salaried, they come with these huge fixed costs because, you know, a salary is a fixed cost and you get benefits. And so there's a real incentive to employers to use that labor as much as possible, right? As many of us know, you know, it doesn't cost an employer any more if you work 50 or 60 hours than if you work 40. And so there's a built-in, because most salaried workers are not, you know, paid overtime for any extra work. And so all the risk of not having enough workers, given the amount of work, is really placed on the workers at the top. When there's more work to do, workers have to, you know, pretty much incur that that risk and work extra.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the same principle is working at the bottom of the labor market in terms of controlling labor costs, but there the costs are mostly variable. Because, as Steve was pointing out, these part-time workers come with very few fixed costs. Very few of them get health insurance. Many times they don't accrue sick time or vacation time. And so the only cost to employers really is when they work 1 hour of work. That's what it costs. And so there's a real incentive to minimize the number of hours. That's the way you control your labor costs, is to keep people from working more than you absolutely need to kind of run your business.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same principle that plays out differently, but it creates the same kind of challenges for workers. Your previous caller talked about how availability was being required for full-time work. That has become kind of the new human capital at people at the top, where you need to be tethered to your BlackBerry at all times, and people at the bottom who need to be available to work, you know, whenever a place is open, and for a few hours here or there, or, you know, or whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And so, those are, have implications for family life at both ends of the labor market.
Well, a few more things we want to talk about, but let's go back to the phones to Nicholson, New Jersey, and we'll welcome Susan to our conversation. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you? I love your show. I listen to it almost every day.
Oh, Marty will be happy to hear that. We'll tell her. Your comment or question for our guests.
Oh, I wanted to just comment. I've been a banquet waiter my whole entire life. I'm in the hospitality industry, and when I first started, it was a full-time job, and I worked at a union, Local 54 in New Jersey, and I since have moved to work in Philadelphia, but still live in New Jersey, and I have 4 part-time jobs, and
Susan, let me stop you. Did you say you have 4 part-time jobs?
That's correct. I also have 2 small businesses that I do on the side, too. And I do landscaping, and I also do dog grooming. And, you know, I sew it all together. I make a whole pay every single week, and I'm relatively living comfortable, but by no means could I ever afford, a major dental emergency or medical insurance. You know, I get no paid sick days, no holiday pay. I don't get anything, and, you know, if I take a day off to, you know, my son is sick or, you know, a wedding, you know, I'm losing a whole day pay. Or if I'm sick, I can't go to work, I just lose that day of pay.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very difficult, and I'm not alone. I work with hundreds and hundreds of other people that work just like I do, and I, too, get my schedule maybe 2 days before the week begins. You know, they might call me on a Wednesday or a Thursday to work Friday or Saturday. And it's difficult to say no, because it certainly does become like a smudge on your record.
Right.
And, you know, there was a time in this country where people could raise a family on this business, from this hospitality business.
Yeah.
And it's difficult for everybody, and I personally don't understand how anybody could work 38 hours a week at a Family Dollar or a Dollar General or even the ShopRite for that matter, 38 hours a week, 6 days a week, you know, and be able to volunteer for anything or, you know, be active in the community.
Yeah, have a life outside of work. Susan, I'm going to stop you right there because I do want to give our guests an opportunity to respond to the points that you made. And, Stephen, I'm thinking that Susan sounds a lot like Shannon Harden, who you wrote about in your New York Times piece.
Well, Tracy, you're very lucky to have Susan Lambert on the show. She's arguably the nation's most expert person on part-time work. She's done amazing research on the subject with her colleague, Julie Henley. Susan, on the phone, in ways touches upon a phenomenon that is growing and that, again, many employers think is great and many employees think stink, and that's called the call-in. Susan talked about how, you know, she might be receive a phone call and then a day or two later she'll have to report to work. In my, you know, for my story, I interviewed a lot of workers who said, when I started working at this retailer, I was generally scheduled, 5 hours a day or 6 hours a day for 5 days a week. Maybe the schedule would jump around week to week, but they had 25 or 30 hours. Then some of these workers said after 2 months, 3 months, 4 months there, a weird thing happened to their schedule. They'd be assigned just two or three regular days a week, say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, they'd have to call in, meaning they'd wake up that morning, they'd call their boss, their manager, and the manager would say, we need you to be here at 11 a.m. to work in our store.
Mm.
And, you know, the workers said, you know, on the one hand, they hoped to be called in because they needed the extra hours and extra money. On the other hand, they hated that they had to drop everything and they weren't able to really schedule anything on that Thursday, Friday, and Saturday because they might get called in. And as Susan, the caller, just said, you know, if you aren't available those days that they call you in, you kind of end up on their blacklist. They say you're not dedicated enough, you're not freeing up your schedule enough, and they'll cut back your hours, and they might even lay you off. And as Susan Lambert was saying, you know, this increased instability, it might be good for many employers, but it really is creating a hellish life for many workers.
Yeah.
You know, on that Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, when you're a call-in worker, you might be tempted to make a doctor's or dentist appointment. Maybe you want to make a date with, you know, the guy or woman you have the hots for, and then you really can't do that because you might end up being called in that day.
Yeah.
So, again, the system in many ways is great for the companies, but it really seems in many ways unfair and too unstable for the workers.
Yeah. We want to talk as well about...
Can I just say one
little thing? Susan. And just quickly, because we have about 15 seconds.
Yep. Okay. I just wanted to say that Susan on the phone's example is one reason our national statistics underestimate involuntary part-time employment, because when we do how we classify people as involuntary part-time employment is all you're asked is, do you work 35 or more hours per week? And that could be for two or three or four jobs.
Wow.
And if you work the four jobs, you're considered a full-time worker. So it hides.
Susan, let me stop you right there,
like,
because
Susan,
we've got to take a break.
Sure.
But I want you to hold that thought. We'll come right back
okay.
to it when Radio Times returns.
Penn's Department of Dermatology supports WHYY. Do you have moderate to severe psoriasis? Penn is conducting a psoriasis clinical research study to determine if FDA-approved psoriasis treatments such as Humira, compared to phototherapy or placebo, improve cutting-edge markers of cardiovascular disease. To participate, you must be 18 or older and have psoriasis that covers 10% of your body. Info at 215-662-SKIN. 215-662-SKIN.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The digital front in the civil war in Syria. Will it help the anti-Assad forces if they have better ways to communicate? Also, food writers Kim Severson and Julia Moskin go spatula to spatula in their new book, Cook Fight. It can get messy, but it's all in good fun. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Resident Ensemble Players, Delaware's professional acting company in residence at the University of Delaware, supports WHYY. Love, Lust, and Camels take center stage in the French farce Anything to Declare, November 15th through December 9th. An unconsummated honeymoon, a popular painting courtesan, one persuasive camel dealer, and a family named DuPont provide an abundance of Parisian mayhem and innuendo. For tickets, 302-831-2204 or DelawareRep.org.
Welcome back to Radio Times. We're talking about part-time jobs and the rise in the number of part-time jobs, even as full-time jobs seem to be going away. And many people are finding themselves having to try to hold down multiple part-time jobs. And yet that's very difficult from a scheduling standpoint and just from a living your life standpoint. We've been talking with a couple of guests. Stephen Greenhouse is the labor and workplace reporter for The New York Times. He's the author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. Also with us is Susan Lambert, who is an associate professor at the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration, and her work focuses on the work side of work-life issues. And Susan, I apologize, I didn't allow you to finish your thought there, but I want to pick up where we left off just before we went to the break.
Well, I did kind of finish it. The idea is that, you know, I think that, you know, our national statistics underestimate the number of people who are working part-time involuntarily, because they count somebody as full-time if you have multiple part-time jobs. And that isn't quite what most of us mean by working full-time.
Right.
And just to give an example, in 2001, you know, it depends on how you ask these questions. So before our economic downturn, among part-time hourly workers, 36% of women and 48% of men who were working part-time said that they would prefer to work more hours for more pay. So that's a much larger percentage than what we get from our usual statistics.
Well, Susan, in the couple of minutes that we have before we have to say goodbye to you, I do want to talk about what needs to be done to address some of these needs, particularly as it relates to women. What reforms perhaps need to take place? You know, what has to happen to improve the situation?
Well, there are, you know, many different things, but I think one of the steps is to pay attention to what are the incentives to employers. And when we change incentives, we tend to change behavior. And right now, there are enormous incentives, as Steve has pointed out, to keep work hours low. And we have no laws that counteract that. And so one possibility, which would be more of a stick rather than a carrot, would be to change or add to our Fair Labor Standards Act so that not only would we have a minimum wage, but we would have employers provide minimum guaranteed hours, which would really structure in a fixed cost so that employers would be more motivated to have an incentive to use their workers well. And one of the, you know, the problems that is going to face us really soon here is the Affordable Care Act, which will provide an additional incentive to employers to keep people's hours under 30 hours per week. As currently, you know, constituted, the administrative rules say that employers do not have to provide, you know, don't have to pay that shared responsibility fee if they don't provide employees with health insurance if they average fewer than 30 hours per week. And the administrative rules give employers wide discretion in terms of what constitutes kind of the qualifying period to look at. And so that's a huge incentive for employers not to, you know, to pay people for more than 30 hours per week. What we know from the history of kind of policy is that whenever you have these, what we call these policy cliffs, like 30 hours and that's it, or $10,000 and that it creates all these unintended and often negative consequences. So an alternative for that would be to just prorate it. And so that, you know, there's no big cliff here, but it's prorated according to what you you pay your workers, or to even change those incentive structures so that it's in the employer's best interest to provide people with full-time jobs with benefits.
Yeah. One last question, Susan, before we let you go. Is there energy around this, whether it be, you know, overhauling the Fair Labor Standards Act or some of the other suggestions that you have made? Are there efforts underway to try to get that done, and where are we as far as that's concerned?
You know, I think that as, you know, Steve's piece and other pieces coming out are kind of raising awareness of this kind of the undermining of quality of jobs in this country. And I think around that, I think there is increased interest in, as we move forward and we build this economy, that we pay attention to the quality of jobs that we're adding to the economy. But in terms of that kind of the legislation, you know, the way that I think about it is that the original Fair Labor Standards Act, which was passed into law in 1938, people started making the case for that in the 1900s. So I think we're starting to lay the foundation for that, but there, you know, it hasn't caught on yet.
Well, Susan Lambert, thank you so much for being with us and helping us to explore what the ramifications are for women in particular as we move toward, you know, a greater part-time workforce. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, you are listening to Radio Times on WHYY. And by the way, perhaps you are an employer. Maybe you're a small business owner and you're dealing with some of these issues of trying to manage your bottom line and keep people employed. And that's been a challenge for you as well. We'd invite you to join our conversation at 888-477-9499. And Stephen Greenhouse, I want to go to the phones to Doylestown and welcome Suzanne to our conversation because I think it dovetails with some of the things we were just talking about. Hi, Suzanne.
Good afternoon. Morning. Still morning.
For a few minutes anyway, right?
Yes. My husband is full-time at a company that has two facets to the business. He happens to work at both of those ends, but the one business, which is a retail store, is going to be closing, and they've decided to close because of the Affordable Care Act. Mm. Frankly, that they'll have to pay, even though they have a lot of part-time employees, that they would be obligated to cover those employees. So, fortunately, he will be part-time at the other part of the business, but it impacts him.
Well, and
on the other hand,
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, go right ahead, Suzanne.
On the other hand, I left my business earlier in the year, have been looking for a part-time job, only part-time, have sent out dozens of resumes, and have finally given up and have signed up for Social Security. I'm at that age where I can do that. Mm-hmm. I'm close to it anyway. And have given up looking for even a part-time job.
Wow. Well, Suzanne, we so appreciate your sharing both your husband's situation mm-hmm. as well as your own. And Stephen Greenhouse, I think, you know, again, Suzanne is a great example of some of the issues that people are grappling with here.
Yes. It's you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't already. Unemployment is too high. We still haven't fully recovered from the huge economic crisis that we experienced in 2007, 2008. Unemployment's nearly 8%. It would be much better for everyone involved if it were down near 5%. You know, hopefully unemployment will come down. It'll be easier for people like Suzanne to find a job. The economy will do better, so her husband's store won't get closed. I wanted to say, picking up on something Susan Lambert said, you know, there's a whole debate about whether it's even good for employers to use all these part-time workers. You know, many employers will, of course, say, this is great for us, this reduces our labor costs, this gives us more flexibility. But there's a school of thought, you know, some call it the high road school of thought, where people will say, look, if you have all these workers just 15 hours a week rather than giving them 35-hour or 40-hour a week jobs, they're not going to be as loyal to you. Maybe they're going to steal more. They're only going to stay at the job for 3 months or 6 months. You're going to have huge turnover. They're going to be grumpy on the job. They're not going to serve customers as well. And, again, the companies will say, well, you know, this works for us. Who are you to tell us that this doesn't work? And one phenomenon I found is that many workers who work, you know, 3-4-hour shifts a week or 4-5-hour shifts a week, during those 4 hours or 5 hours, they work their derrières off. They work their tails off because they really want to impress their bosses, saying, don't just give me 3 shifts a week of 4 hours. I'm a great worker. You know, give me you know, 3 full-time shifts a week, or give me 5 part-time shifts a week. And there, you know, there's this competition of all these people working inadequate hours to work as hard as they can to show their managers, hey, I'm a great worker,
right.
Give me more hours. So in ways that's advantageous to the employer.
Hmm. Well, let's go to Wilmington next. And Paula, welcome, Paula, to Radio Times.
Hi. I've been listening to this, and I'm fortunate to have a full-time job, but where are the unions in this? I can understand how with a small business it's not appropriate, but with big businesses like Walmart and those kinds of places, what happened to the unions? This is the kind of environment where they originally, I believe, developed.
Well, Paula, thank you. That's a great question. Stephen, what happened to the unions?
Yes. So in my big story, I quoted the great Susan Lambert, whom we had on, and she said, one reason for this shift towards part-time work is that unions have grown far weaker. And in the good old days, when unions were stronger, they could insist on good 40-hour-a-week, 35-hour-a-week jobs. But as unions grew weaker, it was easier for companies to insist on part-time jobs. Unfortunately, unions are not very strong at all in retail. You know, they've been strong traditionally in like automobiles and steel. Certainly many government jobs like teaching jobs or social work jobs or fire jobs, or firefighters, police, they're heavily unionized. But retail is one of the sectors of the economy with the lowest percentage of unionized workers. And unions are trying not hard enough, not nearly aggressively enough to unionize retailers, and they're finding it very, very hard. They say that the unions argue that the playing field is tilted against them, that they're not allowed to go inside Walmart to try to, you know, unionize workers, to talk to workers, whereas, you know, Walmart managers or Sears managers, Target managers, or Kohl's managers, you know, can talk to workers whenever they want. And, you know, there is this campaign now to put pressure on Walmart, where 200 workers sort of, you know, didn't report to work for a few days, and they call it a strike. Walmart says that's not a strike at all, but there is a group of workers at Walmart who have become more emboldened. There's this nationwide group called Our Walmart that says it has more than 10,000 Walmart workers as members that I think in their heart of hearts would love to unionize Walmart someday, but Walmart is mighty powerful. There's 1.4 million workers, and it's hard to persuade a majority of, say, the 400 to 500 workers at a Walmart store to vote for union when Walmart is, you know, very much pressuring workers, telling workers, a union is no good for you, you're going to have to pay union dues, and many workers are scared to stick their necks out and speak up for a union because they're worried that they might get punished.
Yeah. Well, let's squeeze in one last call. We'll go to Exton and Roberto. Welcome, Roberto, to Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, the name is Alberto.
Oh,
and,
forgive us, Alberto.
I'm an adjunct. I'm what is called an adjunct teacher at a college, at a community college here in the Philadelphia area. And I just wanted to comment on how we are, as adjuncts, are teaching as any other teacher at colleges, but they prevent us from having more than 3 classes, for example, because more than 3 classes would mean that they would have to give us benefits and health insurance. So we are paid less than assistant teachers, and we are kept under 3 hours, which obviously forces us to look for jobs in at other places.
Yeah. Well, Alberto, thank you so much for your call. I want to give Stephen a chance to respond before we get ready to wrap. Stephen?
Thank you for your call, Alberto. I should have said, after my story appeared, I received many letters from adjunct professors saying, you know, we are highly exploited part-time workers also. There are all these full-time professors, you know, who teach, you know, 6 months a year. They make $100,000 a year. They get great benefits, summers off. And then all these adjuncts who maybe are allowed to teach only 2 courses or 3 courses a semester, they maybe get paid $5,000, $3,000 a course, and they make maybe $15,000 a semester, $30,000 a year. That's not a great payback for getting your PhD. But, you know, I think the underlying point here, Tracy, and Susan Lambert touched on it, is the job market is increasingly has jobs that really aren't good jobs that help support family or lead to stable family lives. And, you know, if you're trying to raise, you know, 2 or 3 kids and you don't know whether you're going to get home from work at 4 p.m., 6 p.m., 8 p.m., 10 p.m., and you want to plan supper, you want to reach your kid before you know she or he goes to bed, you know, these increasingly volatile, precarious jobs make it hard. And, you know, during the election campaign, we heard a lot about restoring the middle class from both Mitt Romney and President Obama. And I think, you know, the rise of the part-time job is certainly a phenomenon that has been undercutting the middle class.
Well,
I think we as a nation really have to think more about what are we going to do to restore good jobs that enable one to support a family and raise one's kids with a modicum of stability.
Well, and Stephen, that actually leads me to my last question in our last 60 seconds together. Is this trend toward more part-time workers ultimately increasing the gap between the haves and the have-nots? There was a lot of talk about that in the election, and as you mentioned, certainly a lot of talk about the middle class being squeezed. Are we moving in that direction where we're actually increasing that gap now?
Great question, Tracy. I think there are a lot of factors that are increasing the gap between the haves, the so-called 1-2%, and everybody else. And I think stagnant wages, declining wages is certainly a factor. But you know, the growth of part-time workers, you know, I'm sure contributes to that as well. You have more workers, you know, not working 40 hours a week but working 15 hours a week, so they're going to be making like $15,000 a year rather than $40,000 a year, and that puts more people on the bottom of the income bracket. And, you know, one might argue that the companies that are using more part-timers, that helps them increase profits, and that will, you know, raise their stock prices and funnel more profits and capital gains to folks on the top. So I think an economist who would study this phenomenon would say, yes, the greater use of part-time workers is in many ways fueling the income gap, income inequality. Well, and there have been studies showing that the children of part-time workers, the stressed workers, you know, generally are more stressed out themselves. They don't do as well in school because the parents, you know, lives are, you know, they yeah. parents don't have enough there, income, and parents, you know, don't have a stable enough life.
A lot of ripple effects from this. Stephen Greenhouse from the New York Times, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Times. There will be lots for you to write about in the coming weeks and months, no doubt. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, great to be here, Tracy. Thanks very much.
I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain, and you have been listening to Radio Times.